Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening. I'm Robert A. Wilson with NLI Radio, and NLI is Neuro-Linguistic Innovation. Tonight, we're going to talk about depression, and we got Craig Merriweather with us, who wrote a book, Depression 180, Turnaround. And anyway, but we're going to talk tonight about how he expanded his life, but we're going to give you a way to expand your life with Craig's wisdom and how he expanded his journey, but it's also his individual talent that he used to expand his life. Without any further ado, I want to welcome Craig to the show. Welcome, Craig.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I really appreciate you having me on. It's a great honor to be here.
Well, it's my honor and privilege, too, but I really, really want to talk about the book you wrote and the stuff you have on your website that really expanded you and took you into a new paradigm, but how you use it to teach people.
Yeah.
And expand their lives.
The book and the website is called Depression 180, and I woke up a few years ago realizing that my life wasn't working. I was deeply depressed, and I realized I had to make some changes for my son, changes for my family. And so my big problem was that I really didn't have any money. I didn't have any health insurance, but I knew I had a problem, and I knew that I had to find a way out. So I became a big research junkie, and I started looking at what depression is, how it's created, how does one get out of it. Not a big fan of antidepressants, and we can talk about that in a little bit. But what I found was, well, it was mind-opening because there's really no one cause of depression. That's, I think, the myth that the antidepressant medication gives you is that, well, this one pill will fix all the problems. And depression in and of itself isn't like an illness, such as cancer is an illness or diabetes is an illness. It's a symptom of something gone wrong in the body or in the mind. And antidepressants, I mean, the evidence is showing that they might actually do that much when compared with the placebo. So even if you're taking some sort of medication, it's not really you're not fixing the cause. You're just maybe brushing a nice gloss of paint over the symptoms, if that at all. And so I spent all this time looking into depression, what it is, how do people get out of it, and I made a lot of mistakes, but I also had a lot of successes, and eventually I realized one day I was feeling good, and I had risen myself out of that pit of depression, and I was talking to my wife one day, and I'm like, you know, we were talking about how much I had changed and how much, you know, how much nicer it was to live with me in the house. People didn't have to walk on eggshells or wonder how I was going to be in the morning, you know, if I could even get out of bed. And I was saying, well, you know, now I've done, I'm in this new place, but I don't know what to do with myself. I don't know what to do with my life. I'm kind of in this midlife crisis. And I don't know what to do. And she says, well, you have all this information about depression. Why don't you start sharing it with people? And I started sharing it with people, and it's one thing about to have cancer, and it's one thing about maybe diabetes or maybe even being an alcoholic. There's almost a certain acceptance of those things, but depression is, people hide that a little more. People are afraid to come out and say it because there's a stigma about depression, stigma that maybe you've done something wrong or you're not strong enough, or maybe if you had tried harder, you wouldn't be depressed. And as I started coming out and talking about it, it took a lot of courage, had to put on my big boy pants and start talking with people, and people were relieved, and they really opened up and saying how refreshing it was to find some answers, because there's a lot of information out there. There's a lot of stuff that is correct, but there's a lot of stuff that's masked over or not correct, or they don't give you all the information. And so what I try to do on the website and with the information I present in my seminars that I, you know, I get invited around the country to talk about this or in the book is just give the straight dope on what depression is and what are some scientifically proven ways of dealing with it that don't include antidepressants.
How, you know, there's about four or five questions I have for you, but how do antidepressants actually take people deeper into depression and actually open out a chemical dependency on the antidepressant?
Okay. Let me do this, and I'll try to give the simplistic short form of the answer. So if any biology majors are out there, please forgive me. But when your body takes an action of some sort, or when you have a thought, your brain cells start connecting with each other. Maybe you've heard that expression, brain cells that fire together, wire together. Well, to wire together, they have to extend a little arm-like appendage. It's called an axon. And to send a message to another cell, brain cell, they have to send a chemical message that's called a neurotransmitter. Famous one is serotonin. Now, serotonin does a lot of different things. It aids in digestion. It's used by the body for sleep, but it's famously helps you get into a happy mood, get into a more positive state. Now, when this arm out of the brain cell reaches out, it doesn't touch another brain cell. It kind of hovers over it, and it mists this neurotransmitter, this brain chemical, out and kind of mists the brain cell. The brain cell takes in what it needs to get the message so that that brain cell can perform an action. Now, once that has happened, the originating brain cell, the sending brain cell, will vacuum that neurotransmitter back up. It's called reuptake. It'll reuptake that neurotransmitter back up into the sending cell. And what antidepressants do, they're called, modern-day antidepressants are called selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. So exactly like the word implies, they prevent that vacuum effect from happening so that your brain is fogged with serotonin. Now, they do that because they feel that if they're allowing more serotonin to be used by the brain. Unfortunately, what they're finding is that's not the case. There's a researcher by the name of Renee Hinn, and just last year, in fact, she's from Columbia University, and she's a pharmacologist, a professor of pharmacology at the Department of Psychiatry and Neuroscience at Columbia. And what she found and what she published in the journal Neuron last year was that antidepressants can actually decrease the amount of serotonin in the brain. And this kind of makes sense if you think about it, because there's got to be a reason why that brain cell is vacuuming back up that serotonin. It's doing that because it needs it. But if you're preventing that from happening, then now you're actually decreasing the amount of serotonin. And what she found is that in about 50% of the population, the more antidepressants try to increase serotonin production, the less serotonin these people actually produce. So actually, antidepressants can actually cause people to have less serotonin in the brain and presumably, therefore, actually cause depression.
And, you know, every time we use a drug to cover something up, we never really expand out of it, do we?
Well, yeah, I've heard a lot of stories about people being addicted, not addicted so much, but not being able to get off antidepressants. And there's this myth that antidepressants make you normal, and they do not. What they do is they readjust your brain chemistry, and this causes your brain to then make compensatory adaptations as a reaction to the drug, right? So there's this neuroscientist, his name's Steve Pyman. He used to be head of the National Institute of Mental Health in the 90s. Then in the 2000s, he was provost of Harvard. He's now the director of psychiatric research at the Broad Institute of MIT. So this guy knows what he's talking about. And here's what he said about antidepressants. He said, antidepressants operate in a manner that is both quantitatively and quantitatively different than normal. In other words, what he's saying is that your brain is functioning abnormally on antidepressants. And as your brain gets soaked in these chemicals, and your brain's being fogged with serotonin like it is, it has to make adjustments, has to make adaptations. And a lot of this is what people experience as the side effects. About 50% of people quit antidepressants after 4 months because of the horrendous side effects. And one of the problems that I'm going to throw at you here is that antidepressants have actually been linked to violence in people. And this is something that just came out a couple years ago. It was reported in Time magazine in January of 2011. And what happened is the Institute for Safe Medication Practices and the Journal of the Public Library of Science, they were looking at the FDA's adverse events reporting system, and which means that whenever there's a reaction to a drug, you have to a doctor or the police have to report it to the FDA. So they were looking at this, and they found when a drug was reported to produce violent symptoms, that 79% of those drugs were caused by just 31 drugs. And of those 31 drugs, 11 were antidepressants, and 3 were for attention deficit hyperactive disorder. And so Time magazine got wind of that story, and they published an article. You can look it up, go to Google, you'll find it. The title is Top 10 Legal Drugs Linked to Violence. Now, the first one is Chantix, and that's a drug that helps you quit smoking. That is 18 times more likely to be linked with violence. The second pharmaceutical drug linked to violence is Prozac. The third is Paxil, an antidepressant. Fourth is amphetamines used to treat ADHD, like Ritalin, Adderall, Dexedril. The fifth is a drug to treat malaria. The sixth drug linked to violence is Stratera, an ADHD drug. The seventh is a drug to treat insomnia. The eighth pharmaceutical drug linked to violence is Luvox, an antidepressant. The ninth is Effexor, an antidepressant. And the tenth out of the top ten is Pristic, an antidepressant. So if you're keeping track, 7 of the top 10 drugs linked to violence are either an antidepressant or a drug for ADHD, meaning that 7 of the top 10 drugs linked to violence were given to kids, some as young as 4 or 5 years old. And it's inconceivable that we're doing this, but it's become so ingrained in our system that you can take a pill and it'll make you better, it'll make you normal, when all the research is saying, no, it will not. If you read the books, there's Dr. Irving Kirsch's book, Emperor's New Drug. There's a myth of the chemical cure. They show study after study after study that even placebos work as well as, if sometimes not better than, antidepressants. So there's even in the medical community knowledge that it might be more of a placebo effect going on when you're taking an antidepressant than the actual effects of the antidepressant drug. But it's easy. You know, people are busy, and people just want to feel better. They just want to get out of bed. They just want to feel good again. And there are other ways of doing it than just fogging yourself and with antidepressants. And I know this is a very, very serious problem. And hopefully this conversation will at least be more of a wake-up call, and people can go and do their own research. But there are just so many different ways that depression can arise in the body, from biological reasons, like, food allergies can actually cause depression. And this is a really bizarre one that kind of flipped me out when I found out about it. But there was a study that looked to see if individual food allergies could cause mental reactions such as anxiety, panic attacks, depression, confusion, or difficulty in concentration, and as opposed to people who were like taking placebo pills. And what they found was none of the people on the placebo pills were able to create any sort of mental reaction, but depressed people had the most allergies to food, and they were able to create feelings of anger and loss of motivation and severe mental blankness. And the four foods that produced the most severe mental reactions were wheat, milk, sugar, and eggs. And that's basically breakfast, you know. And this is not, you know, there's about 100 prescription medications whose side effects include depression. There's of course toxins in the environment that if you breathe enough or you get enough of it, it can cause depression. But this is the food we take into our bodies. And so this is stuff that you really have to look into. Maybe you're going to the doctor to get some blood tests. Hypothyroidism disguises itself as depression. When you have hypothyroidism, your thyroid gland is not producing enough hormones. And the fewer thyroid hormones means that you drop in your body's energy production and leaving you lethargic, fatigued, tired, depressed. And so this is where you go to your doctor. You got 10 minutes. You say, I'm feeling tired. I'm feeling depressed. I'm not feeling so good. And he gives you a prescription for an antidepressant to supposedly increase serotonin in your head when you got a thyroid problem. That's not going to help you. It might not even help the symptoms, and it might get you attached to a chemical drug that is going to be really hard to get off of, take months and months to get off of. Of course, low vitamin D. Maybe you've heard of this one. This is the what causes a lot of people's seasonal affective disorder. During the wintertime, there's a lot less light. We're staying inside because it's cold. We're wearing jackets and long sleeve shirts and long pants and hats. And so the sun is not able to get on our skin for long enough time to produce vitamin D, and that can lower our happiness level, our mood level. And there are, and a lot of people go to the doctor during the wintertime, say, I'm depressed, and they'll give them an antidepressant. Instead, there are ways of fixing this stuff. Of course, hypothyroidism has nothing to do with serotonin in the brain. A blood test will determine whether that's the cause of your depression or not, and there's ways of dealing with hypothyroidism. Vitamin D, I'll give you a tip right here. There's a light therapy box, and this is a little full-spectrum bulb in a little box with a cover on it. And when a fluorescent light or an incandescent bulb that we have in our homes, they don't produce a full spectrum. So, you know, when a sunlight hits a prism, you'll see the rainbow. That's full spectrum. But our lights inside don't do that. So they've invented these bulbs that reproduce the full spectrum. You can go on Google and find these. You go on Amazon and find them. My wife bought me one of these. Found a local general drugstore. Just happened to be there one day when she was shopping. They just threw them on the shelf. And she bought one. And I was a little not interested, and I was a little uptight because it's called a happy light. And so I was a little offended by the title, and I'm a man, and I'm not going to sit in front of anything called a happy light. But I was so desperate after a week or so, I was feeling so bad that I pulled it out of the box, I plugged it in, I sat in front of this thing for about an hour. You can't just have it in your house and walk past it every now and then. You have to sit in front of it for 20 minutes to an hour. And I felt so much better. I was lifted. You could feel the greatness lift. And it was just by this little light box. It was $30, $40. I mean, you can spend $200 if you want. There's all sorts of different types and styles. But it was an amazing revelation that you can use non-chemical items to actually lift you out of this darkness. And it was so easy. Hey, I'm working at my desk, work on the computer, you have the light on, and it actually lifted me out of this darkness. It's incredible. But, you know, between food allergies, food additives is another big one. Some of the additives they're putting in food, aspartame, that's a famous one. The most frequent complaint to the Food and Drug Administration about aspartame is that it causes depression. Low testosterone. Men lose testosterone as we're growing older. Our bodies don't produce enough. If you have low testosterone, one of the symptoms could be depression. So, again, not something that's going to be fixed by an antidepressant, but you can certainly go to your doctor, get a blood test for testosterone, get a blood test for vitamin D, get a blood test for hypothyroidism. You know, there's recreational drugs, alcohol, caffeine, cocaine, ecstasy, marijuana, tobacco. There are people who become depressed by taking these substances. You know, there's about 100, I think I said before, about 100 pharmaceutical medications that can cause depression as a side effect. And these medications are just your average medications people are taking, antibiotics, anti-inflammatory agents, birth control pills, blood pressure medications, painkillers, all these sorts of things. Here's a great reference for you I want to pass on if you're taking some sort of medication. It's called the Physician's Desk Reference. And it used to be a big, huge book that doctors had in their office, and they could look up drugs and see what the side effects are and what drugs you're not supposed to take with each other and what the dosage amount is. And you know, to take it before bedtime or take it with meals, all this kind of information. But now it's online, and it's www.pdr.net, Physician's Desk Reference, pdr.net. On the left, you'll see a little box. You can enter in the medication you're taking, and it'll bring up all the information you need to know. And if something's not right, if you're feeling some of the side effects, some of the symptoms that this may be creating, you need to go to your doctor and explain what's going on. You need to go to your pharmacist and explain what's going on, especially if you're taking a handful of different kinds of medications. You know, even regular items we might find in the house, such as paint or pesticides or dry cleaners, all these different kind of things, if we absorb them into our bodies, either by eating them or drinking or breathing or absorbing them through the skin, if we get them in their bodies, it can actually have a toxic effect. And here's an example of that I want to pass on. There's a chemical by the name of hydrazine. Now, hydrazine is a colorless liquid that is used in rocket fuels and pesticides, chemical manufacturing, growth retardants, things like that. Now, hydrazine, when absorbed into the body, blocks vitamin D6. I'm sorry, vitamin B6. Now, vitamin B6 is needed to manufacture serotonin. Now, there's enough hydrazine in one serving of fast food French fries or one bag of potato chips to obliterate all the B6 in your body. So you really got to be looking at what you're putting in your body. We live in a society where people take better care of their cars than their own body. And you wouldn't think twice about putting a cheap gas in the car because, you know, gas is $4 a gallon, but down the street, some guy's selling gas for $1.25. You won't even think about going, that guy selling $1.25 a gallon gas, because you know it's probably mostly water and mud and oil. But we do that with our own bodies. We're going to go down to the store and see what's the cheapest, most processed food to put in our bodies and think we're going to be good. And it's not. It has effects. What we're doing to our bodies today is going to affect us over the next 20 years in our health and our bodies. I mentioned caffeine a little bit ago, and there's been a lot of news in the papers and on the internet about the wonderfulness of coffee and how well it does against preventing Parkinson's and diabetes even. And but what they don't tell you is that there's enough caffeine in 2 to 3 cups of coffee to restrict blood flow to your brain. It will actually shrink the blood vessels in your brain. And there's 2 to 3 cups of coffee can reduce blood flow by 25% to your brain. And in this day and age of dementia and Alzheimer's disease, you don't want reduced blood flow to your brain. And I know people love their cups of coffee, and if you enjoy coffee, enjoy a cup of coffee. But if you're needing 2 or 3 cups to get going in the morning or keep going in the afternoon, there's a sleep issue involved there that you need to look at. Now, you know, I know our time is short here, so I wanted to throw a couple of things at people that they can look into. Now, of course, I can't diagnose anybody. I'm not a doctor. What I want to do is just kind of show people there are other alternatives to just popping an antidepressant. Now, first off is exercise. And I know that's a dirty word to a lot of people, but study after study after study shows that exercise can relieve depression. And up to 70% of the people, depressed people in some studies, have been shown to be affected by just doing some exercise on a regular basis. You know, up to like 50%, you know, reduced depressant symptoms by exercising. Of course, food we just talked about. You know what you're supposed to be eating. You know what you're not supposed to be eating. You really got to watch what's going on there. But a big one I want to throw out to people is supplements. These are things you can find at the health food store. They're very helpful to me. Very helpful to me. One of them is called 5-HTP. It's 5-hydroxytryptophan. This supplement actually creates serotonin. Antidepressants don't create serotonin. Antidepressants fog serotonin. They take serotonin away from the sending neuron and kind of fog it around the brain. 5-HTP actually creates serotonin. Your body produces 5-HTP, but you have to have enough tryptophan. And that's the stuff in turkey that makes you tired at Thanksgiving. Here's what one researcher said about 5-HTP. He said, I have never in 20 years used an agent which, one, was so effective so quickly, two, restored the patient so completely to the persons they had been and their partners had known, and three, was so entirely without side effects. That one was a godsend for me. You could just feel the darkness lifting. Very helpful to me. There's one called GABA, G-A-B-A. That's a great one. SAMe, S-A-M-E. That was actually on the cover of Newsweek. And that's been proven safe and effective antidepressant with few side effects. You can get vitamin D pills. You can get vitamin D in liquid form and take a couple of drops. You can find all this stuff at a health food store. And there's a lot of others, but this is just stuff that there is help out there. There are ways of dealing with depression. You just got to take some action and take some time to do some research. You know, maybe go to a doctor, look at some blood tests or try to get somebody to look at you and your health in a way that they just don't see, oh, another prescription for antidepressants. So this is like a huge topic. Lots more information about out there. You know, you can find more at depression180.com, certainly. There's some downloads there that you can get for free. Talks about, goes in a lot more detail about the 4 real causes of depression. It's another download about antidepressants and all the studies that talk about maybe depression. Antidepressants aren't actually curing depression as people thought. So it's a huge topic and something that hopefully this will be the beginning of people's conversations about it. But it's affects so many people. I've read one study once that everybody on this planet will be affected by depression at some point in their life, whether they have it themselves or a family member, a loved one, a close friend, or a coworker. And if we can get past the stigma of it, then it can, then maybe we can actually make it through this.
And the book is called Depression 180 Turnaround, and Craig's website is craiginreallife.com. You can go there and look at the book. And Craig, yeah. I really want to thank you. We're out of time, but before I close the show, give the people some wisdom to win their life by, and then I'll close out the show.
Yeah, it's there's a difference between acceptance and accepting where you are and taking some action and changing your life around. If you just take a few steps every day, you're going to make it out. And if you give yourself some pats on the back for the successes you have and give yourself some patience, then you will make it out.
And with that wisdom, I really want to thank Craig for being on the show. And we're going to have Craig back because this is something that's affecting this country so much more than we can realize. And we'll have this, and we'll open your eyes to more about depression. And Craig, thank you, and thank all the listeners for being here. Thank you, Craig.
Thank you, Rob. Thank you for having me on. It was a thrill.
Well, and we're going to have you back about every 6 weeks to 2 months because this is something that's affecting the whole country. And that's why half the reason we're having this, the challenges we have, because people don't want to face themselves.
No, and it's like I was saying before, it's one thing to have cancer. It's another thing to have diabetes, because people give you some sympathy for that and they feel sorry for you. And you get love for that, and you don't get love for being depressed, because that's, you know, quote unquote, your fault or your problem. And,
yeah.
You know, so people hide it and people don't want to talk about it. So, yeah, I appreciate you doing this, because it's not a topic people really want to put out there too much.
All right. Thank you, Craig. And we will have
Rob.
Craig back. You betcha. We'll have Craig back probably in the middle of May sometime. And because we're going to talk more about this, because there's things here that will expand your life. Thanks, Craig. Thanks, listeners. And we'll see you Thursday with Montgomery Granger. He was at Guantanamo Bay. He was a officer down there. And thanks, Craig.
Thanks, Bob. We appreciate it.
You betcha. And good night, everybody. And thank you all, the listeners.